Welcome to the Winter Meetings of Baseball Job Room. This is the second year we've done this, and it is absolutely asinine, but we like doing it, so it's fun. I'm Ben Gelman-Chomsky, bringing you the Winter Meetings podcast, joined today by Larry Hall and Jen Greening, and we're having a great time in the job room waiting for interviews to be posted and such, and this is just something we do to pass the time while away the hours of the day. And Larry, you're a vet like me. This is your third time, I believe, at the Winter Meetings. And this is what happens on Tuesday and Wednesday. We get real bored.
Yeah, and you also get exhausted just trying to power through this thing. It's a tough go of it, but it's worth it. It's a lot of fun. You meet a lot of people and a lot of important people.
And on the other side of things, we have Jen, who is a first-timer. She's a rookie. You may have to hand her out a Rookie of the Year award at the end of this thing. But Jen, this is your first meetings. What are your impressions so far of what it's like here at the job fair?
Well, I've got to be a little honest. I'm slightly overwhelmed with the size of this hotel and all of the baseball executives that are here. But it's an exciting kind of overwhelming. So I'd definitely like to be received the Rookie of the Year award with maybe a little job thrown in there at the end of it.
Never hurts that way. And you mentioned all the executives you see walking around. As I was walking back here with the audio equipment, I passed Brian Cashman talking to Ken Rosenthal. Ken was less formally dressed than I have ever seen him in my life.
Wearing board shorts by any chance?
Just no, unfortunately, suit, no. I admit I was disappointed in that, but I saw that. I passed Al Kaline this morning, nearly lost my mind. That was pretty cool. And then I passed Peter Gammons not 30 seconds later. And Gammo is always here. You can see him everywhere.
You know, we were talking about music a little earlier. We should see Peter Gammons jam out. Maybe he'll bring an instrument and do a little jam session.
His musical knowledge is uncanny. When I was at the Boston Globe, we were doing a Q&A session with him, a web chat. And I was the moderator. I was fielding questions, reading them to him over the phone. He would dictate his answers back to me. And then I would type them up and put them in. And one of the questions was about if you could play with any musician living or dead, who would it be? And he said Derek Trucks of Little Feet. Amazing guitarist.
Wow.
He played in the Allman Brothers Band, too. He was an amazing guitarist. So as I was typing up his answer, he says, you know, Derek Trucks, his uncle pitched in the major leagues for the Detroit Tigers. And I said, is that Virgil Trucks, who had 5 wins in 1954, but two of them were no-hitters, two of them were one-hitters, and one was a three-hitter. The Tigers were just that bad a team.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, and we had this geek moment, and then we went back to being professionals. But the point is, I had a really cool geeky music moment with Peter Gammons, and I will never forget that as long as I live.
I think my favorite musical moment was the other night out to eat. I ran into Tommy Lasorda. He went up on stage and sung Take Me Out to the Ballgame, and boy, was that a rendition I've never heard before in my life.
I can imagine, and I heard that he was also singing Elvis at some point.
Yeah, well, he tried.
That is absolutely excellent. There's a lot of jobs posted here for all kinds of things. Larry, Jen, and I are all going for some combination of media relations, play-by-play in the case of Larry and I as well. And it's just really exciting to be here. There's an energy in this room, in the winter meetings as a whole, and it's good that there's an energy because this place is gigantic. The Gaylord Opryland is roughly the size of my hometown of Bexley, Ohio, and I get exhausted walking everywhere within this. And Larry, you've been to 3 winter meetings now. This is much bigger than any of the other hotels we've done this at.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's a river going through the entire thing.
That's not an exaggeration. There's a literal river. It's a man-made river.
Man-made river, but it's still a river. River, nevertheless. I mean, you have a body of water in this hotel. That's exactly right. Get a boat, go for a little ride.
I'm going to become a gondolier. That'll be
gondolier,
my big,
there it is. You should,
my big money-making
scheme.
Drop
in the suggestion box. Drop in the suggestion box.
Why is no team offering a gondolier internship? That's what I want to know. I would love to see that.
I'd like to take my interview on a gondolier, that's for sure.
That would be great. Now, that's what I would do. If I were hiring here, if I had interviews, I'd say, meet me at the boat dock, and we're going to ride around and do our interview, and you have to sell me on yourself by the time we dock again. That would be a hell of an interview. Oh, now I'm really sad that I'm not in a hiring position. I would have done that in a heartbeat. Okay, so Nashville, much larger than the other places that we have been doing
this. Much warmer, too.
Much warmer. It has never been weather this nice, although today it is pouring down rain outside. Nine kinds of fun. I'm getting the same looks I did last year for doing this nonsense over here. People are like, what is this ass doing? So It's always fun to get this going on. So we now shift to baseball because that's the reason we're all here. And, you know, we've got some great baseball knowledge around this table. Jen, you've been writing about the SEC. You've seen some terrific players come out in the last couple of years. Kevin Gausman, Mike Zunino, guys like that. Drew Pomeranz from Ole Miss. You know, there are a ton of great players that have come through. Who is the one who has impressed you most in the time that you've seen him?
I'll have to say it's Kevin Gausman. I mean, I got to interview him when LSU came to play at Auburn. I go to Auburn University. And he's really just a solid pitcher. And when I wrote about him, when I got to talk to him, I asked him about it, how he felt. He was a first-round prospect for the draft. And any answer he tried to give me was all about how he's playing for the LSU Tigers and he wants to win them an SEC championship and hopefully a national championship. And I was just, honestly, I was astounded by not only his talent, but his posture.
His humility.
His humility, yes. And I just couldn't help but think, here's this kid who doesn't even know that his answers to me are just making him even a bigger prospect for the scouts for being a major leaguer.
And we've run into that over the past couple of years, Larry. Guys who are just high-character guys, you really want them to succeed, not only because of their talent on the field, but their demeanor off it. And that's really great. Who are some of the top prospects you've seen in your time? You were with the Portland Sea Dogs this year, Double A for the Red Sox.
Sure, yeah, and the Red Sox farm system is looking pretty good right now.
Loaded for bear,
yes,
buddy.
And, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr. came up, Xander Bogaerts came up about halfway through the season, maybe a little bit later, and they just killed it. They flat out killed it. In fact, it helped us because the first month of the season, we have 5 wins. Second month, 7 wins. We were setting records for losses, and all of a sudden, the second half of the season rolls around, best team in the Eastern League. And Xander and Jackie had a lot to do with that. Mm-hmm. The pitching really tightened up, though, and that was a big part of it. But that was cool to see. We had Anthony Rinaldo come up, SEC, in a little LSU action. He struggled a little bit, but he'll be fine. He's a good young pitcher, and he's got a very tall stature. So on the mound, intimidating presence, which is cool to see.
I have heard that Jackie Bradley Jr. has defensive skills for days.
I don't know if I've ever seen anybody like him. Just watching him live every day, he glides. He makes the outfield look 2 inches. He does.
Yes, he does.
And he's got hops, too. The dude can jump.
Yeah, and he was supposed to be, initially, he was supposed to be a top 10 prospect coming out of University of South Carolina. And he had an injury that cost him most of his last year there.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused him to fall to the Red Sox. And I was watching that draft while I was in Hickory, and I was like, Bradley's falling. We could get Bradley. And he came, and I was over the moon. That was
he
the same draft they got Matt Barnes.
Real deal, yeah.
Which is looking like a better and better pick as well. I've been lucky enough to see Jurickson Profar, who is now killing it with the Texas Rangers. Cody Buchel, who's a pretty good prospect in that system as well. And this past year, Taylor Guerrero in the Rays system. Kid's going to be a number 3 or higher in the majors. Legit pitcher. There's a lot of news going around the winter meetings as well. We're going to start off with perhaps the biggest piece of news, which is Alex Rodriguez, who is going to miss the first half of the 2013 season. He's going to be out until about the All-Star break with more surgery. So first of all, what do the Yankees do here? You know, there's not exactly a bull market on third baseman out there in free agency. And to trade, they don't have a great farm system right now. Where do you see them going to fill that void at third base?
Honestly, right now, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. Do you have any ideas?
Well, I would say they'd go with Ramiro Pena, but he's not an everyday player. And I don't see that being what they want to do there.
Well, I don't really think that they should really go for an everyday player, as much as I agree that they do need to reach that market for third base. They, you know, as in even the way that A-Rod finished last year, it's just not very respectful to pull in an everyday player that could potentially replace him. It's just, I just feel like they need to keep that line distinct.
Baseball ops and stats wizard Andy Hoke points out Mark Reynolds, who I have never been a fan of. I fully admit this. I can't stand the way Mark Reynolds approaches an at-bat. All those strikeouts drive me absolutely nuts. It's been pointed out that Reynolds has more strikeouts in like 5 or 6 seasons than Stan Musial did over his entire career. And it's not fair to compare anybody to Stan Musial, but
it's an impressive stat.
It's absolutely insane. So I'm not a Mark Reynolds guy. There's been talk that the Yankees might try to make a move for Asdrubal Cabrera from the Indians, which would be great, but he's a shortstop at least nominally. So you'd have to either move him or Jeter to third base. And Jeter, I think, honestly plays better at third base now anyway. He doesn't have the range for shortstop. He still has the arm for third base. And he has the instincts to play either position. I'm seeing some some head shaking over here. No, no. Well, I mean, it's not the optimal solution, but could be.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that, and I can agree with you. And one thing that really does annoy me about the Yankees is their lack of utilization in their farm system. I mean, I understand that Alex Rodriguez is going to be gone for half the season, but I think this provides good opportunity for the talented young players in their minor leagues.
If only they had those talented young players in their minor league system. They've got catchers and not a whole lot else. Their minor league pitching has really fallen off a cliff over the past couple years.
Why not try taking a catcher and moving him to third base in the minors? I mean, he sure has the arm for it.
It's not the worst idea. I could see Austin Romine trying to make the move over. It wouldn't be the worst idea ever. So that's what's going on with A-Rod. Do you think, Larry, his career is going to be marred by injury like Ken Griffey Jr., his former teammates, was? Do you think because of that reason he'll fall short of maybe breaking some records down the road?
Yeah, plus the productivity seems to be going down anyways.
Definitely.
And it just looked like it did in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it almost seems like the Yankee fans hate him right now.
They never like him.
Bronze Jeter, you know?
They only like you when you're producing. And A-Rod produces too inconsistently at this point.
Yeah.
I remember in his prime that there was no more feared player in the game. But
you mean during the 3-year stint in Texas where there were performance-enhancing drugs involved?
Cough, cough. Yeah.
Cough. Let's just go out and say it.
Let's go ahead and say it. But, yeah, A-Rod out for half the year. That's going to be a really interesting situation in the Bronx, especially with all the moves that Toronto and Baltimore have made. Tampa Bay, a perennial contender now. There's no guarantees that the Yankees are going to sit atop the AL East at the end of the season anymore. It is a new landscape in the American League East. And speaking of the American League East, Mike Napoli signing with the Boston Red Sox. 3 years, $39 million. And that's a little pricey, but you have to remember, of course, that because the Rangers didn't make him a qualifying offer, Napoli doesn't cost them a draft pick to sign. So that's part of it. Do you think it's a good signing for them at first base, bring in Napoli? I know it's a thin market out there.
Yeah, I do. Especially, you know, Napoli is a good clubhouse guy, too. Good for team chemistry. And that goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere he goes, he's also a fan favorite. You hear the Napoli chant wherever.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting when we go from a polarizing figure like A-Rod to Napoli.
It is.
But, yeah, you got to like it, right? You have to.
I'm a fan. As a Red Sox fan, I'm a fan of the signing. The money might be a little more than I would have liked, but they've got a lot of space cleared off the books thanks to your Dodgers. So, yeah, and Larry is so bitter about this.
That's a terrible trade for us. Alan Webster. It was cool that he actually came, though, because he did pitch in Portland for us for the last, month of the season.
But I was saying,
you're not in the Dodgers organization anymore. This is not fair. If we had Clayton Kershaw, him come up, and if Chad Billingsley could find his stuff, might be pretty legit.
It always makes me sad that I've worked on the East Coast for 2 years and that there hasn't been a Dodgers affiliate in either league, nor has there been a Cubs affiliate. I really would love to see that. I'm not a Cubs or Dodgers fan, but those are two franchises with a lot of history to them.
Oh, yeah.
Jen, what's your take on the Napoli signing? Obviously, this is a guy who can play multiple positions. He's got some pop in his bat. Had a down year last year, but he could still be a useful piece.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at the Red Sox, I think they really needed a signing like this. As far as the pricing goes, the Red Sox, they're going to be able to afford it. They are the Red Sox, after all. They get ticket sales just by being the Red Sox and by playing at Fenway Park. So I don't think it's really that much of an overpriced pay when you think of the Red Sox. But as far as the actual Napoli going there, I think it's a great signing. I think it's just kind of exactly what the Red Sox need to really shake things up a little bit in their clubhouse and maybe even pull things together so that they can be that top-notch team again after their collapse a couple years ago.
Angel Pagan, re-signing with the Giants. There's a team that's had success and stability in their clubhouse for the past couple years. And Pagan, 4 years, $40 million. This is a 31-year-old center fielder. I think that's about the right price for him, given that he's going to outperform that $10 million the first 2 years and underperform it the last two in all likelihood, based on, you know, him losing his legs a little bit at 34, 35. But I do think that's a really good signing for the Giants to keep that clubhouse they have going.
Yeah, you know, it's as a Dodger fan, it was a little bit hard to watch this year in the postseason with the Giants.
I can imagine.
That was one of the most amazing runs I've ever seen. They're down to, like, what was it? The first series, it was 3-0, 2-0, something like that. Either way, they were something down big time.
They were down 2-0 in the divisional series.
And Marco Scudero, that dude is the man. I love him.
What a year Marco Scudero had. He starts out getting traded from the Red Sox to the Rockies. Has an okay performance with them. Nothing major, just okay. Has some health issues there, too. Gets traded at the trade deadline to the Giants. And then he just goes on a tear. And he's, like, the hero for them. It's an unbelievable story. And kudos to him for making a career out of being that scrappy utility guy and outperforming what he should.
Killing it.
Absolutely. Another signing, another former Dodger who came over in the Beckett-Gonzalez trade. James Loney signs with the Tampa Bay Rays. Do we care? Is he still a useful player?
I always like the potential he had.
Mm-hmm.
With the Dodgers, but
sure.
This game is not based on potential.
No,
especially
when
you
get to
a
performance.
He's played in, how many years has he played in the league now?
Something like 6-7.
Potential
around a while. It's Russell Martin period.
Yeah, I mean, if you have potential his first couple of years, fine and dandy. But at some point, potential needs to turn to production.
And he's never been a big power guy, and he's losing his speed a little bit. His range at first base is diminishing somewhat.
Yeah.
I'm not sure necessarily that this is a big upgrade for the Rays. I could see them moving Luke Scott to first instead, but go figure. So I'm not really sold on the Loney signing, but you got to have somebody playing first base. Jason Marquis signed with the Padres, but the bigger pitching news is Dan Herron signing today, Washington Nationals, 1 year, $14 million.
That's an easy team to root for, by the way.
It really is.
Yeah.
There's no hateability factor with the Nats.
There's not.
I know a lot of people don't like Bryce Harper, but I mean, when you think about everything else that the Nationals have, even I worked for the Orioles last year. I worked in their minor league system, and even I had to pull for the Nats a little bit sometimes. I went to some of their games. It's just a fun place to be.
And the Nats, you know, obviously maybe the best known promotion they have is the President's Race. Teddy finally won a race this year. Very proud of Theodore Roosevelt.
I do remember that. I remember going to that game and a local fan who always went to the game says, never, ever root for Teddy. Don't ever root.
You were at the game where he won?
I was, actually. I was.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I almost didn't vote for Teddy.
Wow.
I am deeply impressed. That's pretty awesome. Gosh, I wish I had that going on. I did almost catch a foul ball at Camden Yards before my season began, so that was kind of cool.
There you go.
And then I had a foul ball go into my broadcast booth not once but twice during the regular season. Which is terrifying.
The press box is a magnet for foul balls.
You can't react quick enough. You don't think it's coming because the angle is so strange. You're like, oh, okay, it's not coming up here. And then all of a sudden it barrels past your head. You're like, well, I avoided a concussion very narrowly.
I'll give Dan Edgerson a big shout out because when he was doing the number two for the Sea Dogs, he made a just glorious catch in the press box, hanging out the window, all that good stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I almost caught one at Fenway Park at Futures at Fenway. I'm serious.
I think he saved a little baby in that, too.
Did he really?
No.
Okay. All right. Moving back to the news, I actually like that Herron signing for the Nats. If he's not up to what he once was, it's 1 year. There's not a lot of long-term risk involved in that. And if he does live up to it, he's their number four starter, and he could be almost Cy Young caliber.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Nationals are definitely an up-and-coming team. They were playoff contenders this year. They were projected to be World Series contenders this last year.
They could still be this year.
They very well could be this year.
And there's rumors of the Orioles, of course, statewide rivals of the Nats, being interested in Mike Morse from the Nats, since there's a logjam. You know, if Adam LaRoche re-signs with the Nats, Morse might not have an everyday spot with Denard Span in center, Jason Worth in left, Bryce Harper in right. You know, where do you play Mike Morse? He's an everyday caliber player. So the Nats might be able to move him to the Orioles, get something pretty good in return, maybe a Jonathan Scope or something like that.
Yeah, that
would be a solid pickup.
I can definitely see that, and obviously I'm a little bit biased towards the Orioles. But, I think the Nationals and the Orioles are both coming up and pretty much out of nowhere. I think the Nationals really showed that their potential when they signed Jason Worth for 7 years from Philadelphia. I know a lot of Philadelphia fans were very disappointed, and they were so mad at Jason Worth because he signed for, what was it, $118 million or something. They thought he was overpriced. But
he was overpriced, but...
But for 7 years, I think that's really what he was looking for. He was looking for a long-term deal with a promising organization, and the Nationals have that offer. And I think the Orioles have it as well with Dylan Bundy, a future
Cy Young candidate.
I believe a Cy Young. Yeah, I believe he might be Cy Young in the next couple of years.
And now, if you were a GM and you got hired to run either team, which one would you rather have right now, the Nats or the Orioles? It's a tough question.
That is really tough.
Based on the resources and the talent already in the franchise, I go with the Nationals because Lerner has shown he's willing to spend money to make the team better.
Yeah.
You've got, not only do you have Bryce Harper, but you also have Steven Strasburg. Yep. Now, you can make an argument for the Orioles. You've got Manny Machado and Dylan Bundy. Ha, ha, ha.
And boy, Adam Jones.
And Adam Jones. But the Nats also have Jordan Zimmermann and Gio Gonzalez, and now they've got Anthony Rendon rising through the ranks, Danny Espinosa. That team is disgustingly talented. So good for the Nats, good for Washington, D.C. fans. They've waited a long time for this.
Have. Yes, they have.
And they deserve every bit of this and more.
Running things in quarterback. It's
unbelievable what's going on in D.C.
Astros are next, huh?
And the last bit of major baseball news before we get into some predictions on major free agents and trades is Brad Lidge, of course, one of the great closers of his generation, retired, didn't want to come back unless he was full strength and didn't feel that he could do that. And as a Phillies fan, I want to ask you this, Jen. Do you identify him more with the Phillies or with Houston, where he started out?
You know, I have to identify with him as a Philly because, you know, in 2008 he went perfect. He went 48 for 48, mm-hmm, over a couple years, and you know,
in that magical season,
it
for
was
the
such
Phils.
A magical season, and I really can't get over it. I respected him in the Astros, even, and I know he's done a lot there. But I really just have to think of him as a Philly. And when I found out that he was retiring, I was personally heartbroken. I felt like a member of my family was moving away. I mean, I knew that he wasn't with the Phillies any longer, but it's just something that, as a Phillies fan, you know, winning a World Series, it's just it's very heartbreaking. But mm-hmm, I'm glad he can go out and he has that under his belt. He has that perfect season, and I'm happy for him, and I wish him the best.
Where does he rate historically, do you guys think, in terms of closers? Like, do you put him up in the Trevor Hoffman, Mariano Rivera echelon? Do you put him a level lower with, like, Troy Percival, Rob Nen, Tom Henke, one of the greats? And I should add to the Mo Rivera echelon, Raleigh Fingers. Maybe
mustache alone.
And Eckersley. Eckersley.
And yes.
Again, mustache alone. Yeah.
Sessions are a great part of the game.
I agree.
They need to be brought
and
back.
Thank goodness John Axford has been leading the charge, yes, in that regard. Lord has he.
Sal Pisano.
That Fu Manchu.
Yes, he's got it going in.
That is crazy. So where does he rank historically? What closers would you put him with? Not looking up the stats right now, just your estimation.
It's tough to put him up there with Mo and Trevor Hoffman because those are... Like,
I think you can put him on the same level as, like, Elise Smith, though, which is not a bad place to be, certainly. Troy Percival, I would make an argument for, one of the great closers of his generation as well. Rob Nen with the Marlins, the Giants, had a hell of a career. Jonathan Papelbon could join that someday. Craig Kimbrell looks like he might beat them all.
Yeah, he is headed for something else. Yeah, it's really hard to say historically. I give it a couple years when he's actually become history, and we'll have a better estimation for you there. But I know I was checking out something on ESPN, and they put him, like, quite up there with Rivera,
mm-hmm,
and almost up there with Rivera, at least. And I was very happy for him when they said that. And you know, I don't know if I'd really put him up there, but if ESPN's gonna put those two names in the same sentence, I'm proud of it.
You're happy to do it too. I remember when his slider was among the most feared pitches in baseball.
Oh, yes.
That unbelievable slide piece that he had, and still, to a lesser degree, has at this time. Moving on to my favorite part of this thing, the predictions on major free agents and trades. We're going to run down a list. None of these guys, to my knowledge, have signed yet, so that keeps us a little cleaner. You know, we still haven't had Dan Heron on this list, so that's fine. The big name on everybody's mind, Josh Hamilton. This will be seismic in impact. Yeah. Is he going back to the Rangers? Do the Brewers have an outside shot at him? I've heard the Phillies as a mystery team on Hamilton.
Oh, really?
They're not. they're not getting
it. It could be. They've got money to spend. They need to compete in the NL East.
Yeah, they did. If Josh Hamilton went to the Phillies, I would be ecstatic, but I'm not.
Do you think he could handle the scrutiny of playing in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I do. He's already beloved. I mean, like, he's such a respectable player that, you know, unless he really bombs,
screwed up,
then I don't think, I mean, like, he'll get such a good reception going into Philadelphia that that can really hold his, he can hold his own there. It's really, there are two things that you need to be successful in Philadelphia, and that's one, play well, and two, don't say the wrong thing. And that's one of the reasons why Chase Utley was so successful in his career here. He played well, and he never said anything at all, so it was impossible for him to say the wrong thing. Whereas Jimmy Rollins, he played well. However, he called Phillies fans front runners, and that was a large
cardinal sin,
a huge stint in his popularity in Philadelphia.
Good for him.
But yeah,
good for him.
Thanks. But
man,
no,
who stands by his beliefs, we can respect that.
I think Josh Hamilton. I mean, he's got such a huge history with the Rangers. I wouldn't be surprised if he stayed there.
Larry, what's your call?
I like the Rangers as a fit for him. I really do. I mean, they took him in when he was obviously having all those ghosts from his past come out, and he's done amazing there. The fans love him.
Yes, they do.
It works for him in Texas, and you hope it would work somewhere else.
But there's no telling.
There's no telling, but it's worked. And he's a Ranger.
Andy Hoke, again with an off-the-wall choice here, Baltimore.
B-more. What? Be more in the house.
I don't know. For a guy who's battled drug addiction in the past, putting him in the city where The Wire was filmed, not sure that's a good idea.
Great show.
But you never know. It could be a great fit, and I could just be blowing smoke here.
I mean, yeah, it could be just like an out-of-the-nowhere type deal. I don't know if he'd really fit in there. I mean, I'm not saying that the Orioles fans wouldn't be nice or good to him or anything, but...
But,
I,
boy,
I
would
know.
That shift the balance of power in the
exactly,
AL East.
Exactly, yeah.
That
he's already going through some interesting shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know that Peter Angelos is looking to spend that much money. You know, you're going to have to pay $20 million a year minimum.
No, he's going
to
be up there, yeah.
$25 million is the number that Scott Boris wants.
Which is why we should all quit what we're doing and play baseball.
I know. Well, yeah, because that I've got the body for that. Yeah. 5'6",
whatever.
Glasses, terrible vision, all right.
Make you a pitcher. Yeah, 100-mile-per-hour fastball, you'd terrify everybody.
I think I have a 63-mile-per-hour fastball.
I might be able to hit that. Maybe.
Yeah, you know, these are the things. Although, if I was left-handed, I could get a major league job tomorrow. If you can throw strikes as a left-handed pitcher, it doesn't even have to be 70 miles an hour. You will play.
See, I'm a softball. Maybe I'll just get up and
there
like,
you
look,
go.
Look
start practicing.
Style. Henry Rongarner, float it.
Yeah,
up
break
there.
Your arm. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just be careful with that.
At the end.
Michael Bourne, the speedy center fielder, formerly of the Atlanta Braves. They've already replaced him with B.J. Upton. From the Tampa Bay Rays, 5 years, $75 million. Where's Bourne going to go? The Nats aren't there for him anymore. The Giants aren't there for him anymore. Who needs a center fielder at this point? Who's looking?
Well, the Orioles aren't looking, but I can see how Bourne and his just his demeanor on the field and off the field, that it would be a good fit in Baltimore. That's just throwing a name out there.
Can you imagine that outfield if Adam Jones moved to left field and Bourne was in center?
Exactly.
And you've got Markakis, who is underrated defensively in right field.
Oh, absolutely underrated.
Underrated player.
I think that would be a fantastic outfield.
Good Lord. That's actually terrifying. I'm not sure I want to see that.
That's not fair. That shouldn't be legal.
Maybe I should tell the GMs.
There you go.
Dwayne Wade and LeBron James matching up.
Yeah. Who's playing? Who's playing center field for the Dodgers these days?
I'd have to look it up. I don't know what our deal is in center field.
The only other place I would really say would be amazing for him would...
Matt Kemp.
I think of him as a corner guy, though. Yeah. I feel like he's a better fit long-term in the corners.
Absolutely. I would definitely agree with that.
I don't view him viably long-term. I think they'd be well-served by signing Bourne, moving Kemp to an outfield corner, and then you've got a pretty fantastic defensive outfield there, too.
Yes.
San Diego doesn't fit because they've got Cam Maybin. And Houston, they're not looking to make that kind of big sign. They're not competing right now. There's not a lot of big parks out there for Michael Bourne to patrol.
No.
So it's going to be interesting.
Those two are, though.
Where he winds up now, especially because the Nats already got Denard Span. The Braves have already replaced him. And there's no chance the Rays are getting in on this action, I don't think. I would be absolutely
Tampa
shocked.
Tampa will stay out of it.
Well, they're going to have Desmond Jennings go to center field, which makes sense.
Cincinnati.
No. Come.
still recording?
It's recording now again. I just turned it back on. All right, we missed a bunch of stuff, but we're talking as Drupal Cabrera. We'll just hope for the best that apparently I can only record in 30-minute blocks.
Oh, there you go.
I'm not sure that that's actually the case. I've recorded for longer before. But we're going to move back on to topic. And talking about as Drupal Cabrera, Justin Upton could come back from the Diamondbacks in a deal. That would be absolutely unreal. If the Indians could part with a couple of prospects along with Ezreal Cabrera, get Justin Upton, maybe get Tyler Skaggs or Trevor Bauer, who has definitely fallen out of favor in Arizona, back. That would be a huge deal for them. And Bauer's right in your neck of the woods, of course, because he went to UCLA. I know you're a Trojan. I know. But what are your impressions of Bauer from what you've heard, what you've seen?
Honestly, I don't know too much about the guy. You know, the fact that he went to UCLA is their baseball program's top-notch year
Absolutely.
To year. And they do. I mean, they pound out these prospects left and right. They're always ranked highly, and whoever comes out of there is legit.
Mm-hmm. It's a really high-end program every year.
Those baby bears, you know.
Well, we apologize for the technical difficulties we had, and we've kind of come to the end of today's show. After 32 minutes, that's not bad. Although last year, I think we did an hour-long one at one point.
Was it?
Yeah, it was pretty
nuts.
This
one was probably closer to that, except...
I think this is when we started talking about the Trojans, and that went off for 30 minutes.
Yeah. I don't know when we started this, honestly. It's getting close to noon. It's getting time for lunch. So we're going to call it for Jen Greening and Larry Hall, who I have to thank for being here and doing this with me because it's my goofy little pet project.
Absolutely. It's fun.
I'm Ben Gelman Chomsky. Thanks for tuning in. We'll have this up on the website later today, and all this news will be old by then. Talk to you guys later.